Dealing with a relationship with the opposite sex, the seventh talk in a series entitled Understanding and Living with the Dynamics of Sex was presented by Nancy Scott on November 7, 2007 at McKinsey Study Center's Wednesday night class. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2007. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
Well, I want to reintroduce Scarletta again, who's joining us. This is Scarletta Schaefer. She's a Gutenberg alum. A big round of applause. And we're going to... spend a little time. Okay. So in case the people out back didn't hear the announcement about the bread, there's bread that you can grab on your way out. Free bread. Good stuff. Tegan.
And there's actually no sign saying free bread. You just, the only bread that
good.
Is free.
Okay. There's bread in the dining room that is free bread. Not marked. Okay. Thanks. Oh, okay. Oh, it's by the coffee. There you go. Okay. You guys will have me make this announcement again the next time. Yeah, okay. I want to pick up a little bit where we left off last week. We started talking about marriage, relationships before marriage. We have talked a lot so far about the theory of marriage, biblical theory of marriage, sexuality, sexual ethics. And now we're moving into, so what do you do with being a sexual person, being a made that way before marriage? What does before marriage look like? And what does the road toward marriage look like? And so that's kind of where we are now in the course of the series. I proposed last time that I was inviting you to consider an alternative for the road to marriage that isn't necessarily dating or courtship, but is more like friendship. And I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on that. There have been some conversations this week that have been really helpful in clarifying. A lot of times we get up here and say things that we know what we mean. And one of the reasons we do lots of discussing and have you guys interact with us is because sometimes what we know that we mean doesn't come through what you end up thinking that we mean. And so we always want to have a dialogue and work with clarifying how it sounds, what it sounds like what we're saying, and what it really is that we're saying. So one of the I'm going to start first with just a review from last week, and then I want to mention a clarification that I thought was really helpful this week. First of all, it's that... the question that we're asking is, what is the most loving way to move toward marriage? And a question that might even precede that one is, what does it look like to be a loving person? And beyond that, before that, what does it look like to be a person who is striving after goodness, pursuing goodness as kind of a primary goal? So marriage is the goal for people who are created with this design to be married. I think that that's part of what we're saying, is that we're really designed for this relationship. We're built for it physically, emotionally, psychically. It's what we're made for. Now, that said, is it the highest goal of human existence? No. The highest goal of human existence, I would say, is goodness, is actually being the kind of person that... that loves well, that responds well. This is not something we're ever going to achieve in our lives here, but it's what we are after and pursuing and growing in our longing and desire for over time as we pursue God and goodness. And so this is underneath that umbrella that then we're asking the question, so how do I move from being single to being married if it actually is something that's being given to me? How do I know that? How do I make that decision? That sort of thing. So I was saying last week that the goal then is to be loving along this road in this process. The particulars of courtship and marriage are not specified by the biblical authors. There are principles possibly that are identifiable, as we've talked about already. This is not about finding a formula. It's not a how-to, because human relationships are just too complex for that. So it's not necessarily clean and neat. It's not an organized system that we're going to just provide for you, and then if you just plug in the pieces, it's all going to go right, and you're going to marry the person of your dreams. For some reason, that's not how God seems to be doing our lives down here. So what is done, dating, courtship, marriage, even the way that we marry or don't marry, is very much culturally determined, and that's okay, but it ought to be informed by a principle of love. So what is the most loving way to interact with one another, both before, during, after marriage? Okay, so that's my review. The goal then is to be loving, as opposed to this other person is the object from which I'm going to receive everything that I need and want. So that is how we often respond to one another, because we are needy people. But this is trying to highlight that that's really not what we're for each other. rather, we are for respect and love and kindness. And so we want to think about then how do I interact with another person that communicates that. So loving is going to include respect for the other person's emotional, spiritual, physical individuality, so that I don't see them as the source where all my needs are going to be met. They are a person, first and foremost. They are a person who deserves respect and care. Okay. Because intimacy and commitment grow together, in order to be loving, then we must work toward being aware of how our intimacy is growing, how our commitment is growing in the context of friendship. The distinction or the clarification that came this week that I thought was really helpful, and when we open this up, we can talk more about this, but is that the way we were talking about it last time apparently sounded like we were saying that if you do it a certain way, nobody's going to get hurt. And that's often a confusing piece to this, that we've often been interpreted as saying this in order to, like the goal is so that nobody gets hurt. Well, that's not really the goal. The goal is to be loving. And the fact is, people are going to get hurt because we hurt each other. And whether we're doing it between men and women or between women and women, between men and men, we don't do well at loving each other. We tend to hurt each other. And so working with that process and knowing that is important. So the clarification came with the distinction is between being disappointed and being betrayed. And so certainly in friendships, the between men and women, there could be a time that an interest is cultivated and grown some, and then it ends up not moving further, not moving toward marriage. That could be a very disappointing experience for both people, for one person. But what I'm suggesting is if we think about being friends rather than being a couple together before we know that we want to move in that direction, then it's less likely to be experienced as a betrayal. So my assumption is that the context for an exclusive romantic relationship is marriage. And so an exclusive romantic relationship before marriage is not a good thing. It becomes a pseudo marriage, and here's some of the things that can be difficult about that. I think I talked about those last time, actually, so I won't go there. But it tends to become a pseudo marriage. So I'm kind of married without saying I'm married. I'm kind of acting married and feeling married, and even if there's not a physical relationship going on, emotionally, we can be really committed to one another and consider each other a couple and feel protective and feel possessive and feel exclusive and have all these expectations that say, well, of course we're going to become married. But the trouble is that those are not stated, they're not explicit expectations, they're kind of in the air and we don't clarify them. Or they get clarified and they're explicit, but the commitment is not the sort of commitment that warrants a deepened intimacy on that level. I can commit to you as a boyfriend or a girlfriend and say that's what we are and that's what we're doing, but that's not really a strong enough tie to warrant the kind of commitment that a relationship like this really deserves and benefits from. Because emotional safety is a prerequisite for really good emotional intimacy. And it's just really not even, it wouldn't really even be smart to move toward a really deep intimacy apart from that promise that I'm not going to leave you. And so short of giving that promise that I'm not going to leave you, it isn't appropriate to act like I'm never going to leave you. So, okay, so we can talk more about that too. Okay, so friendship between men and women, which is actually tonight's topic, I think. Finally getting there. Friendship between men and women can be great. It can even be uncomplicated. If there's no attraction, there's no issue. I'm really good friends with someone I've known for 30 years, and we've been involved in a male-female friendship for 30 years, and it really has never been an issue because we've never been interested in each other. And we've been interested in other people along the way, and we've watched that happen for each other, and we've talked about it, and it's been fine. But that's really uncomplicated in a lot of ways. But when there's an interest that develops, when there's an attraction that forms, when Eros gets involved, then it gets very complicated to pursue a friendship with someone that you find yourself having feelings for and finding yourself attracted to. And so friendship between men and women, when it gets complicated by Eros, can be fraught with peril because we are designed for marriage. And so we are naturally going to be drawn toward wanting that sort of a relationship. And so what we need to be awake to is that reality. It isn't that if we decide to do it this particular way, that's not going to happen, or it's going to be clean and neat. It's not going to be clean and neat. But I think it's really important to understand that it's a natural part of being human, that if I spend a lot of time, me as a woman, with a man that I find attractive, I'm going to grow in my expectations and my longings for that because I'm built a certain way to want that and to desire that. And the same with men. I don't know what it's like to be a man, obviously, but my guess is there's a lot of longing and expectation about that that is created by spending exclusive time with a particular girl. So friendship, yes, be friends and get to know each other and have uncomplicated friendships. And when a friendship gets complicated, then be really awake. And even before it gets complicated, when it's uncomplicated, I think it's important to be awake to the idea that that I could begin expecting some things from this. I could begin to promise some things without intending to. That could happen without my intending it. And I need to be awake to the reality that that could happen. And so I want to be deliberate and intentional and really paying attention to the dynamics of my male-female friendships. So to illustrate this, I'll share a couple of different experiences that I've had. A few years back, I had a friend here who I was getting to be good friends with this guy who I found attractive. He was eligible. I wasn't particularly interested in him at first, but we started spending a lot of time together, just becoming friends, and we had a good time. We liked the same things. We enjoyed doing things together. and it was uncomplicated at first. And then it began to get complicated for me because I began to develop an attraction for this man. And I found myself more and more drawn to him and wanting to spend more time, and he was pursuing more time, and so I was giving more time, and we were spending more and more time together, and it was really enjoyable. And I became aware of my own feelings, of my own response to that, which was, oh, maybe we're going to become a couple. I think I might be interested in that. Eros came into the picture. It raised the question. Didn't answer the question, but it raised the question. So I started thinking about, well, that would be interesting. I don't really know him all that well yet. I probably want to wait a little while before I jump right in. But I like what I see so far. But here I'm thinking, I'm having this conversation in my own head. I have no idea what he's thinking. He could just be thinking, we're just buddies. And so I realized that I really needed to clarify for me what was going on. But more than that, I needed to be responsible with what was happening for me. So I needed to take on that I was, with the feelings that I was developing, I needed to work with that. And so what I decided to do was to talk with him. And what I said to him was, you know, I'm aware that I've been single a long time. I've had a desire to be married. So I'm pretty vulnerable to spending a lot of time with any particular man and developing feelings. And so I feel like if we continue to spend time together this way, I feel particularly vulnerable to that. And so just so you know, I'm going to need to back off of our friendship a little bit so that that gets calmed down a little bit, or that so that I don't go there, because I know that I have that tendency, because I didn't go into all this, but what I'm going at is because I know that I have a lot of really deep needs. And when Eros comes into play, it's this huge awareness for me that I have been unmarried for a long time. And this is a need that I still have that has not been met and that I have a very deep longing for. And so I'm really vulnerable to being drawn to someone who might be promising that to me. So this is what I wanted to take on, but I didn't want to make it his problem because it really isn't his problem. So that's how I decided to say it to him. And I said, I'm not saying anything about what you might be thinking or feeling here. I'm just saying for me, I'm going to need to back off from spending as much time together as we have been because I don't want those feelings to start developing. And he responded with tremendous integrity. He said, I am so sorry. I had no intention to create any kind of expectation for you. I am not in a place where I'm ready to even think about that. And I just thought we were being buddies. So thanks. And so that was a really good clarification for me. And it was very helpful for me to know, was I disappointed? Absolutely. I was really disappointed. I had gone pretty far down the road in my own head, making up a fantasy about how great this could be. But fortunately, I hadn't gone that far in the relationship doing that. And so that's, I think, what we're trying to get at here, is that you don't want to go so far ahead in the relationship, in the fantasy, because it's just too important what you're promising and what you're expecting and how these things happen. And so, yes, I was definitely disappointed. But did I feel betrayed? No, because we really hadn't made any promises to each other. But we were beginning to spend enough time together that those were being created. And so I felt like in some ways I was very much preserved from what could have been a betrayal down the road a little ways if I hadn't clarified that at that stage. So, but notice that picture. It was not me saying, you need to tell me what you're feeling about me. You need to tell me whether or not you're interested in me. I wasn't asking for that. I was saying, I know me, and I know I need to back off because I'm going to go down this road if I don't.
You don't have a promise.
Right.
Not that you like,
Oh, right, right. That's a good point. Because I was open to going down that road. If he had responded differently, I would have been open to that. But I didn't want to make it so that he had to respond in a certain way to, you know, I'm not demanding a response from him, in other words. Does that make sense? Does that make more sense? Okay, yeah. Okay. So, another mistake I think that we make is that, and perhaps in this culture that we've, that we're in around here, this is not as much of a problem, but I think that if marriage, for whatever reason, is not an actual consideration of mine, then it really becomes not appropriate to be in a couple in general. So, in other words, if I hadn't been open to the possibility of this friendship becoming more, then it would have been really inappropriate of me to go forward in forming a couple with this person. So that's the other piece, is that I think we, in our culture at large, it's so commonly the case that we get into couples without thinking that marriage is necessarily on the table. You don't have to get married. Obviously you can live together, you can do all kinds of different things that aren't marriage. But even just emotional coupling, being a boyfriend and a girlfriend, is a sort of coupling that if I'm not actively considering, we're deciding whether or not we are going to marry each other. That's why we are boyfriend and girlfriend right now. That's why we are hanging out with intention. But what we're trying to say is that to do that with less promise on the table than, or with the amount of promise on the table that actually is on the table, maybe that's a good way to say it, rather than with a lot of implicit, implied promises. Okay, so you get the idea. So there's also a couple things that I was going to say about, we could talk a little bit more about responsible friendship, and being in friendships responsibly involves being awake to my own needs and wants, being responsible for my own feelings and needs and desires, and not making them about somebody else, not attributing them to somebody else. Because this, in the end, will contribute to a really healthy marriage, because a healthy relationship is two individuals coming together, deciding to be one. And so the more those two people are individually aware of themselves and responsible for themselves, the more deliberately and intentionally they can come together and become and decide to pursue the project of being one together. And so because I want to learn to be loving and responsible, I can do that now. I can do that without being married in all of my relationships. I can learn what that looks like. So that might be about all I need to say before you're... I'll add maybe a couple other things. The question to be raised then when a male-female friendship gets complicated... is what does it look like to love this person right now? So given what I know right now, which is maybe there's absolutely no promise on the table, what does it look like to love this person? Consider that these feelings tell me primarily something about me and my longing. Eros tells me about me. It doesn't tell me about them. It isn't some magic thing that, I mean, it is kind of a magic thing, but it's not something that, yeah, well, never mind. You know what I'm saying. It's my experience of it is what I have to work with. I guess that's what I'm saying. And so being responsible with that and not making the other person responsible for feelings. Okay. I think that's it.
Nancy, can I make a little clarification? This probably doesn't to be said. Probably everybody understands what you're saying when you say this, but we are talking about the relationships that might head toward marriage and that kind of stuff. And several times you've talked about what does it look like to love this person. I just wanted to clarify that we're not talking about what does it look like to enter into a romantic relationship with this person.
Right.
We're talking about the biblical notion of love your neighbor as yourself. That is, what does it look like for me to consider the welfare of the other person as well as my own?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, which is always the issue that I'm facing with every human being I deal with, is how can I, am I called upon to do something that considers, that is for their welfare, that may cost me something or require me to stop and evaluate how I'm doing things. I'm sure people knew you meant that, but I just...
Well, I don't know. But, and even above that, the pursuit of goodness, I want to add on the top layer of that, because what does it look like for me to pursue goodness in the context of this friendship? And that's when my call to loving this person, to being a loving person, comes into play. So, yeah, I think that's a really good clarification. Some of you know that I'm a fan of Scott Peck, and his definition of love is the will to extend oneself toward the spiritual growth of another person, something like that. I actually had it in here. Anyway, it has the idea of extending oneself toward one's or another's spiritual development and growth. And so it's a will, it's a decision to extend myself. It might cost me something. And it can be a move toward another person's growth or toward my own growth. That's love.
Hello?
Hello.
I guess what my question is the outline that we're talking about seems almost completely opposite of what one would come into contact with in society today, as far as like film and music and art and things like that. And so,
yes.
What my question is, why is it like that? I have a hard time within Christian communities and subcultures with understanding why we look at the way society is, and it's almost like, okay, well, let's make it an outline that's completely opposite. And I don't know, it's just partially
okay, so,
because of the way I was brought up and whatnot, it's a hard pill for me to swallow. And so I'm uneasy and I'm uncertain about when I see something that's like, oh, well, that's just completely different than from what all the stuff I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Thank you.
Sorry.
It's really weird to have this disembodied voice in here.
I'll come up here.
I was looking at the speaker for a minute thinking that would help, but it didn't help.
So that's my question.
Okay. I think that this model would work just as well outside of here than inside of here.
Well, I think it would work.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's compelling.
The model makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I see in society is so different,
mm-hmm.
that I'm like, how am I going to relate this outline to other people who are going to look at me like, you know, like the doggy look, like,
Do you mean?
Go ahead.
My experience is actually really different in a certain way, because I think it's opposite of what the world does, if you want to call it that. But I feel like it's also very opposite of like what most Christians do. And I came to a very similar perspective of how to like relate to other people, like before I was even here. And that was growing up in a very conservative Christian homeschooling environment. Like, where there was, like, you weren't supposed to date people. The people who dated were bad, and they were, like, rebellious because they were dating. But then, like, people had these really strange courtship relationships that were also very, I don't know, that was not appealing to me either. And I was just like, what is wrong with all you people? And it just seemed so overly complicated because it was this big game, like whether it was the courtship thing or the dating thing, it all seemed like there were these very arbitrary rules where we all follow this strange code of conduct that is completely like disassociated from the way that we'd actually treat people that we cared about in a friendship context. And that's what makes sense to me about it is I've had several conversations with people where like I had this one conversation in particular where this guy was like interested in me and we were like hanging out, but he wasn't actually like saying anything about it and I was not interested at all. And so I was kind of like, just so you know, like just so we both know where we're coming from, this is where I'm coming from and we're both coming from that place, right? And he's like, no, not really. So I'm like,
he sounds nice.
And so I'm like, well, this is why I'm coming from this place. Like, I'm actually just at a place in my life where I'm not really interested in being in a relationship at all. So I didn't have to go into the part that I wasn't interested in him. But that was also the case, too. But the main issue was that I wasn't in a place where I was interested in getting into a relationship because I made a rule for myself that I didn't want to be in a relationship when I was in college because I had enough stuff to figure out at that point. And not that I still don't, but anyway. And so we were having this conversation of like, well, why am I not like in a place where that's something that I want to be doing? And I was explaining to him like, well, because I can't imagine like starting to date someone that I don't really know. Like, that's just weird. And I don't just like become best friends with somebody I meet, you know, like, you don't just like have coffee and like get someone's phone number and like do something with them every day for the rest of your life. Like, you just don't do that. And he was just looking at me and he was like, how are you going to get married? And I was like, I don't know, but I don't really think it'll be a problem. And like, to me, this actually makes a lot more sense because all I have to do is say, well, I wouldn't treat anybody else that way. Like, the reason that I am not really into like dating this person is I wouldn't do that with my friends. Like, I don't feel like it's a very caring way to, like, interact with people. It's not the kind of person I want to be. And so why in the world would I do that with somebody I would be thinking about spending the rest of my life with? So to me, it actually seems more consistent. But I guess it depends on how you treat your friends, too. But that's my thought on it.
There are several aspects to your question. The first time you asked it, we were talking about that.
I asked this before?
No, I mean, you...
When you were disembodied.
There was the part in there, and then there was a part when you came in here. But you were talking about that you have this hard time with, you know, the Christians and their sort of seeming to be automatically on the other side of whatever, you know, is going on in culture or something. And I think that's an important distinction to make. I agree that there is a lot in popular Christian culture that's just sort of, I would say, somewhat arbitrarily reactionary. It's just, we're going to define ourselves as being different than those guys. And if that's where we're coming from, then I think it would be right to question whether there's much validity to what we're talking about. I don't believe in that as an approach. There is a very biblical concept of the problem of being worldly, but the problem of being worldly is not being like the people in the world. That is, there are a lot of ways that I'm like the people who are not believers, and my goal is not to sort of arbitrarily distinguish myself from them. The problem of worldliness is there is a God who made this world, and there is a destiny, an end that he has made me for, and to be worldly is to live as if this world is all there is, that God is not really there, and that purpose for my life is not really the purpose of my life, and to think that this is where I have to make it work, this is all I've got to work with. That's worldliness from a biblical perspective. So, I mean, whether we're right or wrong in what we're saying, I would maintain that what we're trying to do here is to say we have been called to a picture of what it means to ethically to love each other in the sense of caring about the impact of my actions on other people, and also a calling to pursue the telos, the goal of human life, the way God has made it. So the idea that marriage was made for something. Now, then it is not necessarily surprising, though, in my culture, the way things are, and this culture is not the way, I mean, you don't have to go back that far to find American culture actually having a different picture of how this stuff works. But the thing about it is that two very fundamental human needs and desires are involved in this stuff. There is the sensual experience of sexuality, and there is the emotional satisfaction of having that person that makes me special. And those are really heady, those are things that we really want to have. And our culture has bit by bit removed the barriers, the constraints to basically say, you ought to get as much of that as you can. And so, yeah, in that sense, we are saying something different than our culture is, but I think our culture, I mean, this is kind of why I brought up popular songs a couple weeks ago. I mean, that we have this recognition that when you go for this, it's not as if there aren't consequences and that it all turns out rosy. In fact, oftentimes it doesn't. That we have that to look at and say, you know, maybe there's something wrong with that picture. So I think that brings me to the second part of your thing. When I'm talking to other people and they're thinking, you know, what weird planet are you on? I think we can describe it both in terms of the positive and the negative. The negative being, you know, random hooking up does damage. and I'm not interested in inflicting that damage or experiencing that damage. And positively, I believe that what we are, that sexuality and a relationship with another person, that it's part of what we're made for, and there's something worthwhile to pursue. I'm not settling for the lowest common denominator. I'm pursuing something that I think is ultimately more makes me more of a human being. And that, I think, they may not buy it, but there's something about that that's got to be intriguing to people because they're not hearing much of that.
So. This question's for Nancy. Boys and girls are very different.
I've noticed that, too.
Yeah. We communicate differently and we think differently. Mm-hmm. Can you address the issue of what a guy-girl just friendship looks like versus a girl-girl, in my case, girl-girl friendship? Because with a girl, you can communicate on a very deep level. What is appropriate in a guy-girl relationship if there isn't something headed? And then there's a follow-up question, but start with that.
Okay, then. Well, I think there are really big differences, and I think that it's important that we understand that we work at, even this is another way that we can work at being loving, is to work at understanding one another in terms of our sexual differences. So learning about what is it like for me as a woman to have a friend that's a man? What's it like for him? How do I understand him as a man? And how is that different? I think that's a really important project and an important question. I don't know how well I can answer it for you the way you've described it, but I think there are certain differences that, for one thing, I think because of the longing that we have for marriage and for both the pull sexually as well as the emotional pull of having this person be special and have me be special to them. It's that's why I was kind of teasingly saying it's fraught with peril, because any friendship like that can develop those kind of expectations because it's primed to. Now, can that happen? I think increasingly in our culture, that can also happen between women, and it can happen between men. And I think it's something to be really aware of. That, and I think in some ways, in my generation, it's not. I think we were not quite as vulnerable to that as you guys are. That you really need to be considering what is a woman-woman friendship like, and what am I communicating, and how intimate should I be with a female friend. So that's partly. But a couple of other things that come to mind is I think that, and maybe we could have some of the men describe their experience of being friends with women too, would be helpful. Women definitely connect in different ways. Women tend to be more outward processors, verbal processors. Men tend to be more inward. Some men are nodding, so I think I'm onto something. They tend to be more internal, except for some men. it's actually, I mean, and all good stereotypes are meant to be broken, by the way. So these are all just generalizations, and there's a lot of differences. But in general, that's the case. Men tend to be more internal, and so it's more threatening often for men, correct me if I'm wrong, to have an intense conversation face-to-face this way. It's much easier for men to have good conversations when they're doing something else. So driving a car, fixing an engine. That's when men tend to connect and have connections. Seriously. Well, in Jack's case, it could also be
a whole new vocabulary.
Yeah. In Jack's case, the activity could be drinking coffee. That works. But where women, I think, are much more drawn to just, let's talk, you know, right here, right now. Let's do it. And that really freaks men out sometimes. And the way that men want to relate, which is, let's go do something, can be off-putting to women because it's like, but I want to talk, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of one big difference that I think I see a lot.
There was several years ago, there was a book that I thought was fascinating, a woman researcher who was by no means, I mean, she was pretty much a feminist, but she acknowledged that there were differences between men and women. And she did a study just looking at the way, it was about how men and women communicate, trying to help like couples learn to deal with each other, to learn. And that was one of the pieces of advice she gave to women. If you want to talk to your husband, go for a drive. Let him drive. Yes. Yes. And I thought there's a fascinating little study that they did where they started with fairly young children. They had two girls and two guys. And so the two girls would be there, and they had each had a chair. And they said, go into that room. Take the chairs in there and wait for us, and we'll come in to talk to you in a minute. And they did the same with boys. And they did this over and over again. And the study showed that what tended to happen is that when the girls went in, they put the chairs facing each other, and they sat down, and they talked. And when the guys went in, they put the chairs next to each other, facing the same direction. Started hitting each other. Yeah, right. Okay. But there really is, I think, something fundamental to that stuff, and it is something that you have to deal with in a marriage relationship, and I think probably in a male-female relationship as well, is that each of you is going to be disappointed with the other if you expect the other person to want to do it the way you feel comfortable with.
Did you ever see The Straight Story?
No.
The guy drives a motorcycle, not a motorcycle, a lawnmower, a sitting lawnmower, I don't know how many miles, 50 miles, to see his brother that he hasn't seen in so many years. When he gets there, they sit on the porch and rock together quietly, don't say a word. At the end of the day, says, it's been really great being with you. So I'm like,
yeah.
That is the quintessential guy thing. We really look odd from the outside.
Yeah. I have just one other fun story to tell on two male friends that I have that you probably will readily identify as I tell the story. But I have these two friends who have coffee together quite a bit, or they used to, maybe not as much now. But they would come go have coffee, and I would join them every now and then, and we'd hang out and talk. And one time I was doing a women's group, and the women and I were talking about this topic, like how are men different. I said, well, you know what? I'm going to ask these two friends of mine that get together for coffee all the time. So I went and plopped myself down at the table where they were having coffee, and I said, okay, so what do you guys do when you're here? What's it like for you? Do you really talk about cars? I mean, is that what you do? And it was so hilarious because they were like, you know, looked at me like, well, so anyway, we talked a little bit about it. And then over time, what I noticed is they work together. They sit and have coffee and read or do, you know, computers on or, you know, they're doing something. They're working. They don't talk. When I show up, they have to talk. And I would show up, you know, fairly often to meet them for coffee and hang out. And finally I said, you guys have to talk when I come, don't you? You don't talk when I'm not here, do you? They were like, we don't talk when you're not here, Nancy. So anyway.
Katie, I don't know if this is part of your question, but I felt like it was, so tell me if I'm wrong. The first part of your question sounded like so I'm friends with guys. How do I be friends with guys in a way that I know I'm not going to, like, communicate the wrong thing? Like, are there, like, things that I should be really careful of not doing? Is that the kind of thing that you're asking too?
I guess more what I'm thinking is that on like an emotional level, like how emotionally open is it appropriate to be?
Well, and I think that a lot of what Nancy was saying about being aware is really important to that, because, and maybe you disagree with me and maybe you guys have different answers to this, but my opinion on the matter is that it's not like, well, there's this subject you shouldn't talk about with a guy, and there's this subject you shouldn't talk about with a guy, and you should only talk for such and such number of hours or minutes, and you should only be...
You don't have to face her, Jack.
And so, or like the room should be this size or something like that. And, like, I don't think that there's, I mean, you have a brain, you have good judgment, that kind of thing. Like, you can, but, like, you can be aware of, the like, whatever it is that you're communicating, not just because you know everything and you know how they're going to react, but you can tell how people are responding to you. And there are just a lot of ways to know what's going on if you want to know what's going on. And I think the biggest issue is a lot of time we don't want to know what's going on, and we don't want to know how we are communicating to other people, and we don't want to face into what we're wanting from that person. And, yeah, right. I mean, cause we're wanting something and we're kind of like hoping it'll happen. And so we kind of are pretending like it is, even though if we looked at it objectively, there's absolutely nothing going on anyway. And when I was growing up, I felt like my family never joked around about like boyfriends or girlfriends or anything like that. And it was like this thing that you don't talk about because it's important and it's serious. And we just don't talk about that. And so I would never talk about, oh, well, I think so-and-so is really cute, or I really like so-and-so or whatever. And with my friends that I had, like, sometimes there would be this silly, like, whatever, just because, like, it was cool to like someone, you know? And be like, oh, I think he's really cute. And you're like, I do. Yeah, I do. And, but it wasn't until I actually got into college, like, before I was here, the college I went to before, that I actually found out that that could be really helpful information for me to, like, verbally process with someone who was not the person I was interested in. Because my roommate was talking to me about how when she would have crushes on people or be interested in people, her mom would be like, well, obviously this isn't a good time, you're 10, you know. But, you know, like, this is really helpful information for you about, like, what is important to you and what are you interested in and, like, what are you responding to about this person? And I was like, oh, my gosh, that is profound. Like, I thought I was just supposed to ignore that I felt that way, you know. And So I don't think it's helpful or possible to put yourself in situations where you don't feel a certain way about somebody, or you keep the other person from feeling a certain way about you. And I don't think you need to, like, spend your time worrying about that. I think you need to just spend your time worrying about, okay, what am I doing? Is that the same thing that I think I'm doing? And what am I wanting? And am I being consistent with that? And in that, am I caring about the other person and about myself? And I don't think it's as easy as don't talk about these things. Do talk about these things. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. That was all very helpful, way more than I was asking, but very, very good. No, but that addresses it. Okay, so then the follow-up question is, so then say you are in a committed relationship, like we're going to get married, or we're headed towards marriage, or hey, let's get married. So does all that come at once? Is it like, okay, we're going to get married, now I'm totally an open book and I talk to you about everything, and you still try to be loving, but it's like, I don't know. At what point do you become completely emotionally joined with a person?
Completely and totally?
Or if you're not that completely joined, at least you're allowing yourself to, like, move towards that. You're not trying to hold yourself back at all.
We'd probably might answer that differently. I would probably answer it at engagement. Prior to engagement, I would think you would want to be very circumspect about. And I totally agree with what Scarletta said about, it's not really about the amount of information. It's more about what I know, and being awake to what I want and what I'm setting up. So if it's a room with candles and wine, you know, that's a statement. And and again, if it's an uncomplicated, unattracted friendship, you can do candles and wine. But if it's a complicated friendship, you're saying something with that. And so that's, I think, Scarletta made a really good point. But so I don't think it's like on or off. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's appropriate to be circumspect on the way toward that commitment, and at the point of engagement is when I would put it, where it's like we're making a promise to each other now. Now, am I completely working toward oneness? No, not until we're married. So that's when, you know, we're going to move in together, we're going to combine households, we're going to... but I think on the way to that, we're making plans for that, and we're moving toward it.
I would agree with that on the assumption that we have the right concept of engagement. I would understand engagement to be a commitment. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to marry you, period.
In a month or two.
Yeah, and it's just a question of we need time to get the wedding license and ceremony together. So, and then that makes sense to me. I don't know what it's like these days. When I was growing up, there were some people that had a concept of engagement that was kind of like, let's say we're going to get married and pretend like we're married and see if we like that. And that's a whole different concept of engagement. One other comment before we change subject on I don't know if I didn't know my wife that I would know how different men and women are. You know, there's a tendency in the security of the marriage relationship, she reveals a lot more about how she's responding, how she's thinking in life situations than I would ever get from a woman friend of mine. I mean, just the way that we're always kind of guarded and circumspect, I think does a lot to cloak that difference between men and women in normal social interaction. It's really in the context of the safety and intimacy of marriage that you're really surprised at how different we are.
And I just even had a comment to add. It's not so much a question, but my four closest friends at this school, two of them are guys and two of them are girls. And they're basically, if it wasn't just for gender, they seem very much alike. The only difference I notice is the guys have no issue with being blunt, and it takes the girls, for some reason, a little while longer to be blunt. And I don't pick up on cues very much, mm-hmm. and it seems, I don't know, is that a guy mm-hmm. tendency at all?
That's actually, I think, a really good observation, too.
Because
men tend to be a lot more clear, and women can tend to be, this again, all generalizations are meant to be broken, but women do tend to be more intuitive, and so they think that we're all seeing, hearing the same stuff, and so we don't need to say it because we just know it. It's true. It's what's true. And men are like, huh?
But I would say reason and or wisdom in that friendship is fine, but I mean, I don't see any difference between them, really, mm-hmm. except for mm-hmm. obvious differences. Mm. But anyways.
Great, thanks.
Last week, Nancy, you mentioned that you think that men and women have very different roles in that, from friendship to, hey, let's get married. I was just curious if you could talk about what you thought that was.
Sure. And I started out by giving my feminist disclaimer. Some of you already know this too, but I was a rabid feminist in my 20s. Rabid. Not going to surprise you much, is it? But I am a recovered feminist, I don't know. I fully believe in the equality of the sexes. And I have had to come to terms with all these differences that we're talking about, because my commitments early on were that's all societal, it's all cultural, we're just socialized different ways. We are socialized different ways, but we are also really different. And so what I have come to conclude in watching, and this mostly comes out of my practice in working with couples, with married couples, is what I've observed over time is that the strongest marriages are the marriages where the man is the one who I don't want to say the most committed, because both people have to be really committed to make a marriage work, but when it's the man's energy that drives the engine of the marriage, there's a much better opportunity for that marriage to succeed. When it's the woman whose energy has to drive the marriage, it's too much for her. It tends to collapse women. They tend to wear out. And this is what I think the feminist movement of the 70s really blew it on, because that was not at all recognized. But I don't think it's a weight that women are intended to carry, is that they should be the energy in the marriage, that the glue that holds it together. That's ultimately the man's, and it's ultimately the man's responsibility before God. That's how I understand the role of headship, is that before God, the man is responsible for the health of the marriage. The woman is responsible to submit to helping that work, and to giving aid and to giving input. So I see the submission role more as a helping kind of, I'm going to give you input, and if you don't listen to it, you're a fool, and then I have to submit to what you decide. and be genuine about that, and be broken in it, and know that that's really difficult for me as a woman, because I know I'm right. I mean, I'm being silly, but it's really true, ladies. And that's a very difficult pill for us to swallow. But I think the men, so this is kind of building my principles here. So the marriages I've seen that tend to work the best is when the man is the force behind it. That said...
Well, could you clarify a little bit? I'm very interested in that. It's a very interesting observation. Uh-huh. What do you mean by the force behind it?
I guess what I mean is that... I don't know how to describe it. I see people who are already in trouble when they come to me. And there's usually one person bringing the other person in. If it's the woman bringing in the man, it doesn't usually have a very good chance of, well, actually that's not true. I'm going to back up, because a lot of times that is true, but it's because the man shows up and decides to really commit to the marriage and work at it. But if the man is the one who is like, I'm going to do anything to make this work, then it's probably going to work. If the woman is the one saying, I will do anything to make this work, and the man isn't, it's probably not going to work. Okay. So that's what I mean. And so that said, that observation has contributed to my forming this hypothesis anyway, that I think it's important in before marriage then that women, and this is very difficult for us, especially in with the legacy of the women's movement, we've been enculturated now to think we can decide these things, we can choose a man, we can ask for the first date, we can say we're interested, we can even get down on our knee and make the proposal. And I just think that that's not how we're made. And I think that if the man is the one who, the man having the man decide on a woman and pursue her and go after her, and having her be the one that then decides, yes, no, I don't know, okay, that's the relationship that's, I think, going to have a better chance of making it than the woman going after the man and convincing the man that he ought to be interested in her. And so that's one of my, is this at all answering your question?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. But, so yeah, I really think that partly, so in male-female friendships, for example, when the complication comes in, then as a woman, I'm going to need to decide, kind of like I did in that situation, I'm going to need to decide, I think, that the man's, God is ultimately going to have to draw him toward me in order for this to be a viable offer. And so if I'm interested in a man and I'm hanging out with him a lot and he's pursuing me, then that's great. And it's equal. That's great. But if I'm doing the pursuing more as the woman, then I need to let him catch up with that. And I also think as a woman, I need to not make it, it's going to sound, I don't know how it's going to sound, but I need to not make it easy for him to not have to decide that. So what I mean is, if I just fill in the gap and I'm always there and I'm always available and really ready to do this and he's not really decided, then I'm kind of helping him not have to decide because I'm kind of there and we're kind of doing it. And so I think it's important for the woman to pull back from that and allow him to decide apart from pressure from her, and then have the man actually do the pursuing. And, yeah. It's what pretty old-fashioned, huh?
Yeah. What about, though, when you have a guy who's driving a train and the girl is like, I'm not sure if I want to get on yet. And then the girl says, okay, I'm going to get on. And, like, the guy stops the train? Because I've seen that happen a lot and, like, mm-hmm. experienced that. Mm-hmm. How do you know he's driving the right kind of train, I guess is what I'm asking. Like,
that's a really good question. Yeah. No, that's a really good question. And I guess I want to take a minute to just talk to the men about that. Don't make a promise that you're not ready to follow up on, even implicitly or implied. Don't be doing that. Don't pursue a woman and get her to fall for you and then say, oh, I didn't really mean it. Just don't do that. That's cruel. And so if you don't know what you're ready for, then don't be messing with it. So that's to the men. And to the women, I would say, be careful with the men, because they're really in this too. And don't be available if you're not really ready to be available in that way. So, because women can do the same thing. Women can do the same thing. It's like, come find, you know, come get me, pursue me. Go, I know I'm going to go after this guy and get him to fall for me, and then go, whoa, I didn't really mean for you to fall for me. So we just need to be really aware and awake and really careful with each other.
part of the protection against that would be get to know the character of the guy. What's driving him? Is his interest this goodness, the pursuit of goodness, the pursuit of Christ-like love that we're talking about, and that's what's going on? Or is he a romantic who's just swept away by the mythology of love itself? Because if he's speaking out of that, he doesn't even know what he's talking about. Men don't typically set out to defraud women, not typically. They've defrauded themselves first. So they're not doing it to be cruel. They just find themselves way in over their head, and then that's when they stop the train, because they have been themselves defrauded by the mythology of our culture, the feelings of Eros that have just overwhelmed them, and so on and so forth. So you kind of need to measure them. Are you under the effects of this drug and these stories that our culture is telling you, or are you asking me to get on board on something that's a responsible and moral decision that you've made out of wisdom? Then that's going to help protect you if you kind of assess where they're coming from. Well, sometimes it's hard, but watch what's interesting to them. Watch what's valuable to them. Watch what, you know, just pick up all those cues about what they respond to when they watch a movie, when they listen to music. What are they responding to? Are they listening to and believing the lies that are being told there? That may be a clue that's fascinating to them, and that's part of their value system and the structure of their reasoning.
But Nancy, when you were saying that that the woman should let the man do the pursuing, I feel like it's natural as humans to want what we can't have. And so doesn't that encourage it if the girl is saying, you know, like, come here, go away, like, doesn't that just encourage that?
Well, I suppose it could. Yeah, definitely. But I think what I have in mind is a little bit more mutual than that. It's not that I'm not suggesting a different kind of game, for example, where the woman is going to be hard to get and make the chase, you know, about the chase. It's not really that. But more, we're really interested in each other, and I'm going to need for him to make the first decision. Is that helpful? Because I'm not really saying, be aloof and, you know, make them chase you. I'm really not trying to say that at all.
Because there is a flip side to that as well. Men are terrified. Men are absolutely terrified to risk finding out whether someone is interested in them. So as you sense that, you will do something to make them feel like a safe venture on their part. So you kind of, notice that the reason that Nancy was giving is don't make it easy for them so that they don't have to decide whether they're interested in you. Well, also make it safe for them where they can, if they are interested in you, take the risk. And that's just a dance that you got to play.
Jackie, this isn't like, I don't know if it's like specifically directed to your question, but this is what your question made me think about. So you can tell me if it's helpful. But I don't know how across the board this is, but one thing I've noticed in a lot of my like friends, like their relationships, their marriages, their divorces even now, is it seems like for a lot of, at least the people that I know, there are a lot of guys who they meet a girl and they're like, oh my gosh, I want to marry her. You know, and I hardly ever hear any of my friends that are girls say that, and I wouldn't ever say that after meeting someone for like 10 minutes. Like, it's just not going to happen. And maybe I'm just like more cynical, but like none of my girlfriends have ever said that. And I've heard so many guys say like, no, I met her, and then like 5 minutes later, I knew I wanted to marry her. And sometimes they do get married and sometimes it works fine. But that's not because they knew right then. And it seems like it's a lot easier for a lot of guys to get very swept up in that whole thing and just be like, I really like this girl, I really want to marry her, blah, 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 blah. And I think that's like one reason that it's really important not to just listen to what people are saying, but to really watch them, like what Jack was saying. And I've I've noticed for me, it's a lot, it's really easy for me to like have these conversations and be like, oh, so we really agree about this, and you think this, and you believe this, and you love this, and this is important to you, and that's awesome. Like, that's great. And then you get to like 6 months down the road, whatever, and you're watching like decisions that people are making and like how they're interacting with you, how they're interacting with other people, and you're like, but I thought you said you hated that. I thought that's not how you wanted to do that. I thought that wasn't important to you. I thought that this other thing was important to you, but you're not paying attention to it at all. And it's so easy to just like have conversations and feel like we're on the same page when you're really not. And this is kind of a convoluted way of addressing two things, I think. That I don't know whether I agree with Nancy about the headship thing. I have a really hard time with it. And I'm still not there, and I don't know if I want to go there. So I don't want to talk about that part. But in terms of how you're interacting with guys, I do think that from my experience, it has seemed like it's probably a pretty smart idea to make sure that you're not just pushing somebody into getting excited and hyped about a relationship, because it does seem for guys it's easier to get like swept up into that, oh, we're in this thing. Than it is for a lot of girls that I know. And so in a certain sense, like, I don't mean this in like a scaredy cat sort of way, but it's like being very protective of yourself, because yeah, like a lot of times they don't know what they're talking about. And like this is happens with people who are like 30, 40, 50 years old. This isn't just like because they're 15 or 20. Because of the drug. And they're just excited and think you're cool. I don't know. So I... and they feel like they're being very noble when this is all happening, you know? And so I don't think that anyone's, like, trying to be a jerk about it, but I think that the listening to not just what people are saying, but, like, watching what they're doing is really important. Anyway.
And women can get really swept up when men are swept up. We love that stuff. So men, don't be intense, because women love intense. They can.
I guess first I'd like to say that I understand the generalization about men like not wanting to talk directly. But I also think that there's another generalization that I fall under, which is I can't multitask. So...
Yeah.
If you want to talk to me, talk to me face to face.
Thank you.
Not while you're driving.
Yeah, not while I'm
while
driving.
You're driving. Good call.
It's about the safety issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I know. Have the woman drive.
Okay.
But just the car, not the relationship.
Right. Right. What we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then I was going to say, I'd like for you guys to talk more about what it means to love someone. And I had this experience. I was walking down the street with a friend of mine, a guy friend who was who had grown up in Las Vegas, and we're in Vegas walking down the strip, and I don't know if you, maybe you guys won't understand this because you've never been to Vegas, but the culture there, sex is sold, and it's advertised everywhere. I remember going to church on Sunday and seeing this billboard of a woman, and I'm just like, oh, okay. And I remember seeing bars that said topless bar. And we'd drive on the freeway, and there'd be a roof on the bar, and I'd be like, "What? It's not topless. Like, there's a roof." So I mean, it's very ingrained in you, you know, this sex. And so I'm walking down the street with my friend, and in Vegas on the strip, there's guys who just pass out pornography to you as you're walking down, and it's like. It's a reactionary thing. Like someone passes you something, you're going to grab it. And so this guy passes a piece of paper to my friend, and he looks at it, and it's, you know, there's pictures of women on it. And he just kind of tosses it on the ground. And the guy's like, hey, you know, don't throw that on the ground. And so he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And so he takes another one from the man and he throws it on the ground, like, very, you know, willfully. And to a certain extent, someone could look at that and say, like, he wasn't being loving, or he was instigating a fight or something. But when he did that, I was kind of like, wow, I was really shocked. And I was kind of like, that he was actually reacting in a loving manner to something that, you know, he was standing up for something and saying, no, this is wrong, and I'm going to react this way towards it because it is wrong. And so there is a certain sense of a rough or angry love or something like that. So I mean, you were talking about being sensitive with other people and stuff like that, and I understand that. But also, I think that there should be a part of love that isn't, you know, that is very critical. And I've never thought of God as, or I've thought of God as more of a surgeon, you know, cutting into you and tearing away what's false than,
right,
you know, a jolly old man. So,
no, that's great. I mean, just I totally agree with that. I mean, Nancy can say some more of that, but the issue is what is beneficial, what is helpful for the other person. And sometimes, I mean, it can be costly to me. I mean, it would be easier to not say anything and not rock the boat. But if I think that this has the real potential to say something that needs to be said and this person needs to confront because this is something destructive in their life or something like that, then the loving thing is to be confrontational. Now, it's easy to... I mean, we can always talk ourselves into, you know, the loving thing for me to do was to blow my top and say all these terrible things, and that's not what we're saying. But no, I agree. Love is not nice. It is seeking the good of the other person, and sometimes that doesn't look pretty.
Absolutely.
I was just going to ask you, like, sometimes could that mean also deciding that you can't be friends with a person if that friendship is something that is unhealthy or that you see as, like, they aren't really going in the same direction that you are, and you're kind of like, well, you know, letting them know who you are and... what your beliefs are and what kind of person you are, and if they kind of, it's not that they mean to disrespect that, but they might have a totally different worldview or a totally different belief system and kind of still go down a totally different path. You want to be friends with them, but you feel like you're kind of sacrificing something of yourself by, I don't know, what do you think about? Would you continue in that friendship, or would you kind of separate yourself from that and just cut it off?
Well, altogether? I think it's obviously very individual, but certainly that kind of circumstance could arise. Now, whether or not it would be loving to discontinue the friendship or pull out of it gradually, or how that would be the most loving, or if it, you know, saying something is what's important. I think we want to be pretty cautious about saying things to each other in those kind of circumstances, just because we don't do it very well. Mm-hmm. And kind of like what Ron was saying, it's easy to justify. It's easy for us to be right about stuff that it's too complicated for that. And I think it's important that we give each other the benefit of the doubt. But I also absolutely agree with Julian that it's the goal is to do what's in someone's best interest. It's not necessarily to be nice or gentle. The goal is to be what's in their best interest. So,
yeah. In an openly communicative relationship with a friend girl, how would love manifest itself in a biblically sound manner.
What kind of relationship did you say?
It's like...
openly communicative.
Yeah.
Where you're talking about what?
Where you can say exactly how you feel.
Okay. I think it... I think it's important to be openly communicative on a certain level, but I think that deepening our intimacy promises something, and that's part of what we're trying to get at is how much I expose of myself and how much I share with another person is part of being intimate with them, and intimacy and commitment just do grow together, and so the more intimate I become with someone, the more I'm implicitly making a commitment to them. And so that's what I'm suggesting. I want us to be, to encourage us to be really awake about what it is that I'm committing myself to when I'm deciding to be openly communicative and very intimate. And so what loving might look like is to work with what it's like for me to not maybe say everything I'd like to say because it might be promising something I don't intend to promise. It could look like that. But making the decision about how I interact with that person as an overarching concern rather than what I say, what I do. Does that make sense? Is that helpful? Does that answer it at all? Okay.
Nancy, you said something that really struck a chord with me earlier.
I'm sorry?
You said something earlier that really, struck a chord with me that I just wasn't kind of, surprised about. Cordless. I was kind of wondering, what is the correct way for a guy to pursue a girl? Because I've always thought that was kind of, a negative kind of attitude. I don't think guys should be obsessed with girls, and I think there should be some kind of, a guy should not be actively always pursued in some girl. And I've seen that acted out in relationships. So can you define, what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love for these men to talk a little bit about it, too. But what I'm getting at is that I agree with you. I don't think obsession is appropriate. And we, because of these deep needs and because of our sexuality, we can become very obsessed with finding a partner. And so I think that's kind of Scarletta's observation about, I think... that men, when I'm talking about pursuing a woman, I'm talking about deciding to marry a woman. So I'm not talking about deciding to get involved with a woman. I'm talking about deciding about a woman that you know really well already because you're really good friends and deciding, I might actually want to marry this woman.
So when you say pursue, you just mean the Eros, little pinch or whatever, the pain of Eros or something. Okay.
Well, the kind of thing you were talking about as well, weren't you? I mean, it's that you were urging the women not to try to sort of artificially foster a decision of commitment that isn't there. So, I mean, the pursuing, what you're talking about is for... really for the guy to be conscious, to be thinking about, this is a relationship that might be going someplace and I'm deciding to be committed to the well-being of this person and I'm interested in pursuing a marriage relationship with them and I'm going to take care with this and see where this can go and that sort of thing so that she has the sense that he's taking this seriously. I mean, it's not necessarily that he has made a commitment of marriage yet, but he's serious about exploring that. And I'm not having to talk him into being serious about exploring that. He is serious about that, and then I'm getting the feeling that he has a sort of character that I could trust and be part of. Isn't that the kind of thing that you're talking about? Rather than, I mean, we certainly do not want to promote stalkers or anything like that. That's not.
Good point.
because I mean, you know, every story of a stalker that you ever see, the guy always has this story about how much he loves her and all he wants to do is take care of her, and it's always couched in the most noble of language, but that's, I mean, you can talk a good game about how much you care about the other person, but it's actually a decision about how you, it's the very act of stalking itself that shows that you're not really that interested in caring about the other person.
I have a kind of, it's a, I guess you could call it a double question. Okay, so my question is kind of, I understand, you know, like, guy's supposed to go after the girl kind of thing, you know, however that's done. But it kind of sounds like you're almost advocating that girls, you know, shouldn't, if a guy's really scared about asking you out, but you can tell that he likes you a lot and really does want to initiate a relationship, are you saying that girls can't, you know, say, hey, do you want to do something to try and get him more comfortable and make it feel like it's a safer chance to go for? Or is that not what, or am I missing something here?
No, I'm really not prescribing do's or don'ts at all.
Right.
So I think that would be fine. And kind of what Jack was saying about even making it safe for someone to approach us can be helpful. But I think the caution I'll put out there is that we can tend to think we know what's going on, and we may not know what's going on.
Okay.
So,
and then this is kind of something that I've seen happen in my in what I've seen happen in relationships sometimes is I've seen guys who, you know, they seem really great. They seem like the perfect gentleman almost. Mm-hmm. When you meet them, when you have friends who are friends with them and stuff, they're really nice, they're super polite to you and things. And yeah, there are some disagreements in their families, I've seen that. And then I've also watched girls get in relationships and things don't turn out well. The guy turned out to be a bit unstable. And so sometimes I've seen that happen with girls, so, and I'm sure it's the reverse with guys. You know, they see this girl, think she's beautiful, perfect, and things go wrong. So I think there are some instances where guys or girls think, oh, I want to initiate a relationship that I'm hoping will lead to marriage, and something goes wrong. And so I'm just kind of wanting to say that sometimes we can't always see everything just on a friendship level.
Timing is kind of everything. When Nancy was talking about pursuing, mm-hmm. I think she's talking about a very, very different stage of the relationship than perhaps what Brian's question was mm-hmm. suggesting, and perhaps what your question is suggesting. I mean, it's part of the cultural pattern that it's what Nancy called coupling, mm-hmm. that we pursue coupling now. It's one thing to pursue coupling now, hoping that it'll lead to marriage. It's another thing to avoid that altogether until you've met the one that you're ready to pursue. And ready to pursue means I've decided I'm going to marry that person. And we just need to decide if it's mutual. Am I understanding you rightly? I think the context for this whole thing is that if you are a believer who believes that God is in control of all of reality, if God wants you married, you're going to get married. You don't need to make it happen. You don't need to pursue it. You don't need to put yourself in a position to make sure that you manipulate someone into this relationship or find, it's not like fishing.
I'm not saying manipulate.
No, I'm not speaking to your.
Okay.
It's so much a part of our culture and just so much a part of our humanity that we want it so bad and we get so desperate that we think we need to make it happen. And I know in my own life and a lot of people I know, the time I got married was when I said, I'm not going to get married now. I'm just way too busy for that. So this is just not an option for the next couple years. And that's when I got married. I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't expecting it. God just decided he had other ideas for me than what I did. There's something about being a person who's not looking for it, who's much more interesting marriage material. It's kind of like the stalker that Ron was talking about. There's nothing worse. Huh? There's nothing worse than being someone who desperately needs me. Why would I marry someone like that? I mean, you're not even attractive marriage material when you're desperately looking to find the marriage partner or to be married or something like that. So in the answer to all these last two questions, I think a crucial foundational issue that we have to get straight is, do we trust God to bring me together with the person that I'm going to marry? And if I don't start there, then I'm just going to find some way to find a strategy that's going to allow me to get into that relationship. And I think that's the wrong way to think about it.
Absolutely. And I would like to, we need to end with that. One of the things I really want to say clearly is that if we're not married, we need to be single. And it goes along with what Jack is saying. So it's not that I, as a person who's not married, I'm trolling and thinking, who can I marry? I've got to get married. I mean, I'm going to know that I have these longings, and they're going to come up from time to time. But if I'm not married, I'm not married. I'm not in a couple. I'm single. And so I'm me pursuing my life, pursuing my goals, doing what is before me from God, and deciding what my destiny is before God as a single person, because that's what's true now. That's what I have to work with now. And I think God is a God of reality. He wants us to be working with what's true now. So that's, so be single if you're single. Okay.